Just had a great conversation with Chase Aubenschein about the poem The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. Man, we had a blast. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this conversation. One of the things I love about this podcast is that, you know, I'm doing this just for fun. I don't care if anybody listens. It's like, you know, I just an ability to have great conversations with normal people who happen to enjoy a poem or poetry. Now, I've known Chase since we were 19 years old, and we're both 32 now, so I'll let you do the math on that. But I've known him for all this time, and I had no idea, and I had never had a real conversation with him about poetry. And apparently, he loves poems. He doesn't love all poems. He's not a huge poet or anything, but he likes poetry, and he is knowledgeable about it. And that's surprising, because he's not an academic, although he's intelligent and intellectual. He's not a writer professionally or anything. He's in global enterprise sales for a company called ADP, a massive payroll company. And he does global enterprise solutions. He leads a pretty big team that sells services and technologies across the human capital management, HCM it's called, spectrum to organizations, you know, from 1,000 to, you know, like 100,000 employee organizations. So huge, massive organizations. He's selling them software, essentially. But this is a guy who is a world traveler for sure. And he tells an amazing story, which I think is probably one of the highlights, even though we really dig into this poem, The Road Not Taken. He tells an amazing story of just one beer. And so Chase is a real storyteller. Like, he doesn't publish stuff. He's just one of those storytellers that you meet at, if you're lucky, at cool parties and things of that nature. So try and, you know, like, stick around for that story of the beer and the banana. If I were to label it, I'd call it the beer with the secret banana or something like that. And, you know, one of his escapades in Norway, which he just kind of happened to go to on a whim. And it's a great story. And it's a bachelor party story too. So I'll let you stick around for that. But the poem that we're talking about is The Road Not Taken. And in that case of the Oslo story, he took the road that nobody else wanted to take, and it ended up somewhere awesome. But the question is, how do we dig into poems like The Road Not Taken? This is a poem that's probably one of the most quoted poems in the history of poetry. I mean, especially in American poetry. Everyone has heard of The Road Not Taken. You know, it ends with, "Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one last traveled by, and that has made all the difference." So, I mean, you've seen that on posters, on coffee mugs, you know, and people's homes, those quotes on a wall. I mean, this is like one of the quintessential American phrases. I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. But what is the poem really about? Is there other interpretations? Are there deeper ways to understand and enjoy this poem? We're going to converse with this poem pretty deeply and have a great conversation with the verse. And I think one of the things that we'll see in this poem is that, as many poems, there are a variety of layers. And it's almost like an organic being. A poem is like an organic entity, like a human, where as you get to know the human, you notice that there's deeper motivations for things. You notice that there are other elements that you can see in that person. And you could also just take a surface level enjoyment of it. And sometimes, you know, that's all you need. Maybe it's just a friend at work that's just a work buddy, and you just kind of enjoy the work buddy for the work buddy, and that's about it. And that's fine. And he, you know, you talk about the same type of topics, you talk about whatever it is that you talk about, like sports or whatever, and that's all there is to that person. Obviously, if you were to get to know that person differently in a different context, then you would, you know, get to know them in a different context. You'd know that they're more than just a person who likes sports. Like, you know, after how many years, and I find out that Chase really likes poetry, and he is not just likes it. He's a kind of a good thinker, and he knows how to, he converses with the verse as though I taught him how to do it, and I didn't. He's just really good at it. So he typifies the kind of person that I want, you know, to be listening to this podcast. I hope you'd listen to the podcast. Just a normal guy living an extraordinary life because he chose the road, not take it. Although he may not agree exactly with that assessment. So stick around. I'm going to read the poem, The Road Not Taken, which is very short. And then I'm going to take on Chase Aubenschein, old good friend of mine, not old, not yet, but a good old friend of mine, and we will converse with the road not taken. The road not taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet, knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere, ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Hey, man, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hey, no problem. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. I always find this funny that we... You know, now that I'm doing these like Skype interviews with friends and people like that, it's such an awkward introduction because you and I have just been talking for like 20 minutes and then I just said, hey, again.
I think I reacted in kind, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like
nice cordial salutation. So,
and listening to a lot of these podcasts, I've noticed that, you know, especially like the Joe Rogan one, which I talk about, which they often refer to the fact that they were talking before. But when we start talking, there's something about recording equipment, whether it's movies or videos or podcasts, where all of a sudden we kind of get into our radio voice and like, hey, case
at hey, Trevor, looking great this morning.
Yes, and exactly. I'm gonna cut that out. The other thing is it's recording, so I'm gonna cut it out and put it all over. That's gonna be my ringtone right there.
We're really just talking dirty about every podcast listener. So
exactly,
if anyone's curious,
that's the idea. Yeah, it's like. So anyway, I'm gonna stop there before I get myself in trouble with my 50 listeners. I think I get 50 people who download it. Two of those
50 people very good people who all have friends.
My mom and dad who are like, "How does this work?"
And that's all you have to do is get two more friends to listen to a podcast to start your downstream.
That's right. That is the idea, man. Downstream. What is this MLM? What are you talking about?
This is exactly. It's multi-level marketing for podcasts. Okay.
So a lot of
the affluent minds of America. That could be our name.
Okay. That would be an interesting show idea, I think. You and I always come up with weird show ideas. All of them gems. I don't even know if I remember a lot of them, but we seem to like almost like we're always, I don't know if I could talk about any kind of drugs or anything with you. I don't know if that's a good idea. But
it's too silence.
Yeah, okay. Well, although the picture I'm looking at on Skype is just you chugging a beer while looking slyly at the camera.
No, backwards hat. Here's the thing about that beer. That is a very well-earned beer that you can only get one place on Earth, and it's at the base of that mountain in Trolltunga, Norway. So that is a man who feels very, very satisfied in his beer.
Nice.
That day.
That sounds like an awesome story.
It was an awesome story. Again, I don't know who would benefit from listening to it, but we'll rope it in here today with our poem.
Well, that's your life seems to be revolved around the road not taken. I don't know why that just came to my head, but it seems like there's something about your life because you like this poem. I think you chose this poem to talk about. I love this poem. I think it's great, and I think it's understood perfectly and misunderstood imperfectly.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of people who misunderstand it And then there's a lot of people who talk about how everyone else misunderstands it.
Yeah.
And it's very, like, a lot of people write, a lot of Americans especially, write about this poem. But before I go into my thoughts on it, because I've probably, like, done more research into it just because this is what I do. But it seems like this is something that you're really excited about.
Well, I think for me, in the name of the poem, and as you read it, something that I think that this poem is good for us to talk about is the language is always very simple with Robert Frost. It's very tangible. It's easy to get into. And it's always beautifully visual, right? I mean, you can imagine yourself in this poem immediately with your own experience. But he's kind of cunning and sly, like the way he tells out the story. And it takes a couple of readings to really, for me, develop what kind of emotion both the poet is trying to evoke, the guy in the poem, and the guy in the poem from his own future. You know, there's a lot of vantage points, I think, in this poem that I find interesting.
Damn, man. That was good. I don't think you and I have actually talked about poetry very seriously. That was the first thing. And that was very impressive. I like that. I'm not alone in the world as just a normal guy who likes poetry. That's good to know.
Not alone at all.
I appreciate that. That's good. But it seems like a lot of people don't want to come out with it. Anyway, so yeah, that was, I think that's true. Let me ask you this. When you first, just real quick, I think that this is a poem about, for me, crossroads and reflection. So I'll just get that out, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But it's the road not taken. So
exactly,
you know, that's how he labels it. Of course, like you're saying, though, there's a lot of there's a lot of ambiguity and things of that nature, where it's, you know, what does he mean? What are his feelings? What are the feelings of the person within it? So when you first read it, your first glance, do you remember at all, like, what you were thinking about or your own?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, like most of us, we all read this in high school at some point. And this was at a time that was before the snarky hipster in me had a chance to grow and shame people for not, you know, understanding poetry. But
wait, did you do that?
No, I don't. That's why I love this podcast.
Wait, do I do that? Are you saying that I do that?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. But we all had, I think the reason a lot of people don't like reading poetry or they're afraid of it more than anything is because they are afraid of that snarky hipster who's going to come and shame them for not getting it. You know, did you even get the depth of this?
Yes.
I
love it. Well, it's like when someone drinks that, like, they learn a little bit about wine and they become a douchebag, like straight up douchebag. The second they learn anything about wine.
It could be cars, wine, exactly. So we all work with that guy. That guy graduated high school and is still out there in the world. So, I think with this one, I took a very literal approach. That's what's nice and comfortable about Robert Frost in particular is, you know, a yellow wood. I think to me that always took me back to Colorado when I was a kid. Had an aunt and uncle up there, and we'd always road trip or take the family van out camping. It's a wooded aspen glen, and you're standing literally on the vantage point of two trails, right? So it's very kind of sunny, maybe it's like autumn, leaves are falling kind of feel to it. And it was a very warm feeling for me. And it was as simple as making a choice between two roads and picking the one you thought was grassier and feeling good about that decision, right? Later on in life. So I think that was the simplest version of taking the words literally when I first read it.
Yeah. And I think that is a big part of what it means. Because one of the things that, if you Google this poem, I think it's probably one of the most written about poems ever. You know, at least in American literature, probably, and maybe even ever in general. At least according to Google, there's like 30,000 hits or something like that.
Well, I mean, you see it in car commercials, you see it all over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially in America. No, but there was there was a famous one done in New Zealand. There's a guy who wrote a book about Robert Frost. I don't know if you saw this book, but it was like, you know, The Road Not Taken and the Making of American Myth or something like that with Robert Frost.
Right. Uh-huh.
And he's talking about this poem and how it defines us to a large degree.
Yep.
So I haven't read the book, but I read like an article or two on it. But there's one of the most common things that people talk about is how we don't understand this poem. I was hoping to just get that out of the way and just kind of talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you take a literal meaning, but you might have changed your opinion a little bit. Or maybe gotten more depth on it.
Yeah, and I think this happens with poetry, it happens with reading, it happens with movies and cinema. As you age and as you kind of go through life, I think you get a better, you get better feelers, you get more context from things like this. And you're, I think maybe it's empathy, that you're, you become more empathetic for the actual, maybe the goal or the expression in something like a poem. So for me, I think what changed is you gotta pay close attention to the vantage point of, you know, the person making this choice in the poem. So it switches a couple times, because at first you're in a yellow wood with him and he's staring down the two paths and can't see past the undergrowth, right? And he's wrestling with two paths that are actually pretty much equal, right? And he contradicts himself a couple times, where he'll say, you know, perhaps this trail has a better claim, so perhaps it's better. But then two lines later and saying, you know, actually, they're worn just about exactly the same. So to me, that's one vantage point of a guy just trying to make a decision and kind of coming up with reasons why this one might be better. But in reality, it's not all that much better. I know that that's something, as you grow in age, you're constantly presented with these things, right? These types of turmoils where, you know, is it a better option? Does it even matter which path I take? I don't know about you, but for simple dilemmas, I have a coin flip app on my phone. So that's so, how,
that's awesome.
That's literally, you know, yeah, I go rampaging through the streets of Houston.
Two-Face or Anton Chigurh. I just watched that movie again.
Anton Chigurh. I think your readers are going to need a reference for that.
Yeah, that's the guy in No Country for Old Men.
Ah,
the murderer. Have you seen that movie?
Terrifying movie.
Yeah, terrifying movie. Which, by the way, the line "No Country for Old Men" is a line for, is the first line of a poem by, I think, Yeats, W.B. Nice. Yeats, that is "Sailing to Byzantium," and it starts. Like it starts. This is no country for old men. And it's one of the most, like, it's up there in terms of all world poetry fame, with mm-hmm. "The Road Not Taken." In
perfect.
It's huge. So anyway, but yeah.
Well, so your if point, I was staring down the path, it would be much easier to not take the one with him standing with that implement he created.
Yeah, the one cow, of them. The cow puncher.
The cow prodder.
Oh, man, when that first happened, I almost pooped myself. Scared the heck out of me. It was like, so shocking.
There's so many ways I don't want to die, but that's definitely one of them. So.
Well, that would be one that you would, because it'd be so instantaneous.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Like, think about how the cop died at the beginning.
Ugh.
That is worse. Like, and the way they shot that with his, like, the boot heel scratches on the ground, where he's, like, kicking, you know, he's got the, his, because that's probably, like, how it would really happen if someone was strangled to death.
Ugh.
Is you'd be kicking the ground and leaving boot marks everywhere. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Anyway, so that we went off a tangent with coin flip. So your coin flip for your life decisions, you have an app for it, which is cute. Now you need that on your phone or on your wristwatch or whatever it is.
Yeah, I can't even be bothered to have a real coin, right? So
yeah. Well, it's
the
like,
future is here.
Yeah, it's like there's that episode in The Office where BJ Novak's character, what's his name? The temp guy. I always forget his name. Anyway.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the temp and, like, they're at...
Ryan.
Ryan. Yeah, they go... So they're all at this play, at Andy's play, and... oh, my God. I'm getting bad with names as I get older, I think. His girlfriend, the... Mandy, I know, like, her real name, like Mindy or something like that. Anyway, his girlfriend asks him what time it is, and he pulls up an app, which is a huge... like analog clock, basically, like it's on his iPad. Anyway,
to prove that she doesn't know how to read analog clocks.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, to prove how much of a douchebag Ryan is. Like, I'm gonna get this big 12-inch iPad in a fucking play and pull it out this thing. You know, talking about like douchebags, like that guy is.
Yeah, Ryan is definitely the guy that would give you crap about not knowing deeper meanings to poetry.
Yeah. So anyway, that was like a 12-minute tangent on your coin flip. So yeah, like the road not taken, there's the coin flip idea behind it. And if we had time, right. I wanted, you know, because so much of this is about like free will and determinism. And I know that's something you're kind of a thinker and you thought about that a lot. But you know, you mentioned this of your coin flip, and I interrupted you. So continue your coin flip toss thing.
So it's funny because he's trying to really like justify his decision even in the moment, right? And you feel the doubt in the next few lines, where, you know, he's trying to hold on to this choice, right? That he wants to go, he knows he can't go both ways, and ways lead on to ways. In other words, once he's made the choice, he'll probably never come back to this split. But he still even reserves, you know, oh, I'll keep this one for another day. He even reserves in his mind the ability to make both choices either way. So I'm not sure what's the right word for this, but it's almost like a lament is the way I take it. This is where he starts to kind of lament on not being able to go down both. And I think this is where, to me, the whole crux of this entire poem is, I shall be telling this with a sigh. Now, you got to think about who's saying this to you as you're reading it, right? Is it the poet? Is it the guy, like, in real time staring down the two paths still? Or is it him as an old man in real time telling you this? And I think it's a reflection of the guy who's staring down the paths. He's already knowing, I feel like, that he's going to, maybe not regret, but he's going to tell of this day as if he made this wonderful choice, and that choice led to all of these other great choices, and that's what made all the difference in his life. And so to me, the sigh is not one of not so much of a happy sigh, right? I think the connotation there, I take it as him as telling, I tell stories all the time, especially once you have a couple beers in me. But I think of him as an old man. Go ahead.
No, I was going to be it's like you're taking over my show as my role, and I'm just going to be the friend idiot. I was going to just say some stupid thing about, like, you drinking beer at the bottom of a mountain with some billy goats at the top, and you're like, after a long journey. I don't know. I was going to. You're basically usurping my role, and you're doing it better than I am. I hate you. I'm like, I just quit at life. I'm just going to be a clerk. Or I don't know why that came into my head.
No, you can be one of those. You can be one of those hipster douchebags, and you still have your poetry. Just go bark at people who aren't reading poetry well.
Yeah, I just need more hair, man. Because I you need to be able to push back my hair. Like,
we can do a bromance locks of loves, and I'll gross them out for you.
Well, you gave me that one thing once. I'm gonna have to share that picture of. Like, it had that bandana and like a
mullet attached.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm interrupting all your great stories, but you're a storyteller around a campfire.
So when I think of this reflection, right, it also takes me to an old man sitting around telling his grandkids maybe, or his friends, or, you know, his war buddies, whoever it is. But the sigh, I think, is a sigh to himself upon reflecting either that he knows that his story is a bit fabricated, not that it's all false, but that the emotion of it or the good decision making is kind of a fabricated reflection to have the group feel like this was such a big deal. I think I see a lot of this in leaders, right, or a lot of speakers, that they kind of have this bravado to them of you know, really feeling very justified in their decision makings. And I was very clear headed, and because I'm such a great decision maker, that's why all these other things took out. And I took the path less traveled, because everyone else was taking the ordinary path. I took the more creative one, or the more difficult one, just because I'm awesome. And so to me, the sigh is actually him admitting to himself that the story he's telling is quaint, but not really all that accurate, that the choice really didn't matter, that he almost even regrets the possibility of leaving the other choice behind. And that to me is where it gets a little bit of a darker tone here at the end, because, you know, the last thing you want when you're an old man is to be regretting your decisions in life, right? So, to me, regretting them is almost not as bad as fabricating, you know, stories to justify the decisions you made.
So you're saying at the end here, you're thinking that because he's saying, I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, he's, you know, you're saying he's telling this story, possibly in his old age, as kind of a lament is your assessment or your feeling about what's going on with these two, because the two roads obviously represents like a fundamental choice,
mm-hmm.
not just a choice of like, should I, you know, wear a blue shirt or a red shirt today, but a choice of like, should I marry this person or that person, you know?
Right.
Because the paradox, or not the paradox, but the problem of choice in a sense is that as a human, we would love to have everything to a large degree, but we are limited. So we would love to marry, you know, Susie and Jesse and Jesse the girl and Lucy and all these other women. Would be great if we could marry all of them, or else we, you know, fantasize. But really, by marrying one, the scary part is that we can only marry one. Like, that's the idea of choice anyway, unless you're a Mormon or something. But other than that, you know, you marry one person at the expense of other. If you pursue a job that takes up 40, 50, 60 hours of your week, well, you can't pursue 2, 3, 4 jobs. So problem of choice is that once you stand at that crossroads and you go down one path, that is the choice. And you've eliminated. So there is a negative side to choice in a sense. There is a dark, like, I wouldn't call it dark necessarily. It's just a reality. You know, it's like.
Well, I think for me in this, it's kind of a critique of the actual guy making the choice. And obviously, it's a short poem. So there's choice is never A or B, and that's the only factor, right? So I think putting women as the choice is probably the easiest, quickest way to decide, you know, between one or the other, because generally, like you said, those are mutually exclusive. So maybe that's the closest you'll get to this type of choice. But for me, it's kind of the need for certainty or affirmation in those choices that they were the right ones to take. And that at the end, you're going to justify the choice anyway. To me, that's what that takes it down a little bit more, a darker path. So we're going back to kind of a philosophical approach, right? I think this is where a bit of Sartre comes into the picture on choice, is that, you know, if you can never really know if your choice is going to be a great choice or a bad choice, you can't really see past the turn in the wood and the undergrowth. How do you make a good choice, right? And I think what this poem is saying is that the way you make a good choice is you feel comfortable in justifying why you made a good choice.
Well, okay, so I think that makes sense, that there is something to the idea that you, the problem of making the choice in the moment you make it. And so to make yourself feel better, right, and have the confidence to do it, it sounds like you're saying you need to be aware that in the future you can tell yourself a pleasant story about it.
Right.
That's kind of what you're saying. And I think there's some to that. I think the challenge of, you know, having the ability to make choice, because I think this poem, more than a lot of great poems, really illustrates what free will is like. And we live in an era today which is predominantly determinist, meaning we don't have free will. Like, people like Sam Harris say we have the illusion of free will. And people use this poem as an example of, you know, we feel like we have free will, but really you didn't have a choice to go down one versus the other. It was based on, you know, his parenting or whatever, that he chose mm-hmm. the grassy one that wanted wear. But really, like, the issue is that this is the nature of being a choosing human being. And that's why it has, I think, like you're feeling here, a darker element, because, it, you know, and we can call it dark if you want, but it's just a reality. I mean, it's like you can say that some natural event is dark and, you know, there's like a tornado, but it's not really, because it doesn't have moral choice, right? So
see, to me, that's where it comes back to the sigh. That's where I think this is the crux of the poem, right? Is that to me, the negative, the only reason I find this in any way a little bit gloomy, or, you know, Eeyore versus Tigger, is that sigh, right? Because he's standing out looking down a path, knowing that in the future he's already gonna kind of like be disappointed that when he retells the story, he'll have to make up that he chose the better one. It's kind of a bummer, right? Don't you want to have, you know, in life, you want to really be able to stand on these decisions and not sigh about it. You know, you want to be able to reflect on a life well lived and choices that you're happy to make, not not that we're put upon you, right? So I think that kind of goes back into your, what you were getting at there is, I think the sigh is what makes it like, ugh. But yeah, no, I took the last, you know, I took the greater path. It was less traveled. It's awesome.
So wait, but now I'm a little confused. Why? I see what you're saying with the sigh.
As I'm wont to do.
Well, that's fine by me. I mean, that's part of the fun, I think, of conversing with these things is trying to understand, because I'll just say there's a great essay that Robert Frost wrote, very short, that he calls The Figure a Poem Makes. And he has a lot of great lines in there about what poetry is and the meaning of it. And one of the things he says is, I don't know if I can find the whole quote, but basically it's, oh, here it is, actually. The figure a poem makes, it begins in delight and ends in wisdom, which I really love that. It begins in delight and ends in wisdom. Now, I don't know if every poet does that, but I think Robert Frost really lived by his own philosophy of poetry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all of his poems definitely begin with a delight, which delight, you know, he's talking about like a pleasant, you know, even a sensual feeling. And then it ends and wins.
Dipping that toe into the hot tub, you know, it's a good start.
Yeah.
Feels nice.
And that kind of analogy is what he really likes. Like the dipping in the toe metaphor is, he likes that kind of thing. Let's see. And then he says, I really love this. Begins in delight. It inclines to the impulse. It assumes direction with the first line laid down. It runs a course of lucky events and ends in a clarification of life. Not necessarily a great clarification, such as sects, S-E-C-T-S, don't get too excited, and cults are founded on, but in a momentary stay against confusion. A momentary stay against confusion.
Well, with a blueprint like that, I mean, that's basically the Taylor Swift heartbreak pop song model for poetry, right? Should be easy.
I don't know that model for poetry. Wait, help me out here.
It's like three lines, break up with your boyfriend, throw in a good hook, and there you go. You get a great Taylor Swift song. With Robert Frost, throw in a nice, sunny patch in the beginning, and then a good reflection at the end, and you've got yourself a poem, right? Is that simple?
Sure. what I'm trying to say is what you're saying. I like the conversation part about this sigh, because this is the wisdom part. This is where he's going into, like, I think this poem is about coming to a crossroads, obviously, and reflection on that. And so you have been reading it, and I don't think you're wrong. I see this as well. You're reading the sigh as kind of like this, oh, too bad type thing. Like, I made this choice. And so my question is, why do you take it that way and not, I shall be telling this with a sigh? Like, yes, there's an element of longing.
I think one reason is the name of the poem, right? The Road Not Taken. It's a whole poem about the choice he didn't make, yet in the poem he justifies the choice he made, right? So I think that's kind of maybe for me, if it was The Road Less Traveled, it'd be a different poem, right? So we can maybe go into a little bit of the history of kind of where this poem was written. We don't have to go into too much of it, because I think you can find 10,000, like you said, YouTube videos of a hipster professor telling you why you got this poem all wrong.
go for it.
But this poem perhaps was originally written for his friend, over quite literally, you know, walks they would take through the woods, and his friend would, you know, pick one path and then almost assuredly complain about not taking the other. So it would have been a better view, or they would have seen more birds, or what have you. Right. So I think something that we're both looking maybe from different lenses on is, I take this choice as a simple choice, not a monumental choice, or a big divergence in your life. I see this as more of the kind of the huge amount of small choices that you have to make all the time to go one way or the other. And then you build a kind of a story on why those choices all lined up to be good ones, as, you know, as way leads on to way, right? You kind of aggregate all those choices and then make a story about yourself that you reflect on later, of why you think those choices were either positive for you or negative for you, but they got you where you are. You're going to make the story either way. Does that make sense? I don't know. I mean, do you take it as more of a big crossroads in life?
I take it as a fundamental, like one of the, so I definitely think it's about choice in general, and it's a, so you can take it in a smaller, like not a smaller sense, but like a more, you know, just walking down the woods, and because it's true, like that's the, what I'm trying to get at is that's the nature of choice. So even on a small basis, like if you choose the red shirt, you can't wear the blue shirt. If you marry, you know, if you have a chicken sandwich, you can't also have the salad. Or if you, you know, you have right. a steak, you can't have, I mean, you can, some people do both. Yeah,
that's the, definitely but, me.
That's, if you have the one beer, you can't have the, oh, wait a second. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. but like, no, but you travel a lot. And so if you travel to one destination, it's at the exclusion of another. And part of like, I know, so anyway, I want to talk a little bit more about that in a second, but your question was, do I think it's a monumental life-altering right. change? And yeah, and I think there are some clues. Like, you know, it starts off, two roads divergent in a yellow wood, and sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler. So he's talking about mm-hmm. like there's a fundamental characteristic change in who sure. he's going to be. And because like, you know, you're going to have two different travelers, but he's reflecting that there's going to be one. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent to the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and perhaps having the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. And now the what a lot of people say, if you Google this, like we all misunderstand this poem, is they quote like the next part of it. Though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And the my whole thing is like those two. So I take a much more traditional reading. Like I think people okay. are generally correct. But I think it's complex, like you're alluding to and you're saying. Is that one, there's two paths, like from an image, just a pure imagery standpoint, there's two paths, except one's a little bit grassier and, you know, hasn't been trodden on, it wanted wear. And now to some degree, he's reading them about the same. You know, he's seeing them about the same basically. And then like you're saying, when he reflects back on that later in life, or he's assuming that he's going to one day, he decides to take the one that is less traveled, and that makes him a better person. That makes him, like, that's how I read that. That he doesn't say it's good or bad. It's made all the difference. But for me, maybe I'm just an optimist, and I read that as he made him a better person. And I'll just really quickly, like, there's a whole bunch of stories about stuff like this where someone like Bill Bradley, the famous, you know, basketball player, and how when
I was definitely thinking Bill Brasky, but that's a different SNL skit.
I don't know who's Bill Brasky.
Bill Brasky. Maybe one or two people will pick that 1997 SNL reference up.
Is that Bill the Belly Scratcher?
Do you remember? No, that? It's a Will Ferrell sketch. It's kind of like a frat brother type thing. So
oh, okay. All right.
Do I remember the Belly Scratcher? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, you don't remember the Belly Scratcher?
this is totally not going in line with the poetry, but yes, I do, absolutely.
Okay. I think that's totally because that was a life. We could throw it in because it's free will. I chose to make an ass of myself.
As we often did. The thing that's sad is now we have this inside joke on a podcast, and we're going to have to explain this to people at bars one day when we're, famous poetry critics.
I think that's an oxymoron.
Dude, you tell about this belly scratching. Found that wondrous.
I don't. Oh, I love your voices. But I don't think there's going to be ever such a thing as a famous poet critic. I think that's.
Oh, it's not what I heard.
What's that?
Said that's not what I heard.
Okay.
Kirk, look down these paths in front of you and go down the one that makes you a famous poet. Kirk?
Nice. All right. But anyway, so Bill, yeah, I appreciate that. But Bill Bradley. Yeah. So,
the basketball player.
But you're like. He chose to consciously pursue basketball, even though he wasn't 100% natural at it. And the way he did it was by choosing to do the most complicated, difficult training he could possibly imagine. So he takes the road of most resistance. And this is one of the things like a lot of like Robert Greene and Mastery talks a lot about, that
that the men and women who've become great chose consciously to go down a path of most resistance, like the hardest, most difficult path possible. And, you know, then you can look back and tell a story about it like this guy does. But that's how I've always read the poem.
And I think that's a fine reading of it. I think it's an optimistic reading of what's going on there. I think if you look at the choices, to me, what it comes down to, though, is you say he chose the hardest possible path. My argument is that no one can know what the hardest possible path is. Maybe he would have been the best poet ever if he had written 1,000 times, a day, right?
Yeah.
It's more that if you feel good about that path, great. You can look back on a life well lived. But even in the poem, as we kind of go back to the lines you read, this is where I kind of talk about, there's almost like a narrative quality to this and then a subjective guy on the road. He's the other person. So you got to go between what he's thinking and then almost the narration of what seems to be certain about the path. So, and then took the other one just as fair. So he took the other one. So he's looking at both and saying they're about the same. And perhaps, maybe, this one has a better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. So he's saying that, looks appetizing. Maybe that one's a better one. But then it goes into the narrator saying those for passing there, they had worn them really about the same.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a check on that, him kind of grasping for what's a better decision. And then the next line kind of reaffirms that. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. So there's not, to me here, this is where there's not one that's less traveled. They're both untraveled. Right? So to me, that's where I think it sets me down a more on the difficulty of choice here. I think he kind of affirms that both are equally, I can come up with some reasons maybe, and maybe that one's a little better, but really actually probably about the same. That's where I think the choice is tough. So I think, again, that's the beautiful thing about poetry is if you're coming into this looking for a bit of optimism and a justification for the choices that you've made and the harder road you've taken, this one falls right into that narrative. Right? And you can look back on a life well lived and happy that you took the harder road and practiced harder, shot more basketballs, that type of thing.
Yeah. No, and I think I agree with your interpretation 100%. I think it's part of it. It's part of the, like a good poem, and Frost talks about this a lot, a good poem is like a human, and that there's a lot of ways to understand or interpret that person. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that there's nothing you can get out of it. Just like, you can know someone for years and learn something new about them, right? Like you were saying earlier. So I think that's true of a poem, but there's also so there's the surface level. There's like the getting something out of it that just helps you, like you're saying, like getting, mm-hmm. getting over a choice that you made. Was it the right choice? Was it the wrong choice? And I think it's, one, I love that this is definitely, I believe, a pro-choice poem. It's saying that we do have choice. It lands completely on that side. And then the question is, like you're saying, is how do you live with the choices, right? How do you make yourself say, well, crap, I could have gone down there and I would have been this person today if I would have gone down there, and it probably mm-hmm. would have been just as good. So why did I choose that other one? And I think there is an element to that of both choices are equally good to a large degree, yes. I do right. personally think that he goes down, that if you're, when you're at the crossroads, do whatever you can to go down the path of most resistance. And I think that to me is how I take it from like a life, because you can't live life in the future, obviously. You live it now. So mm-hmm. that's like you're saying, there's two elements to this. There's that narrative and then there's the reflective. And then, so when you're at the crossroads, what do you do? Well, in my view, do your best to go down the path of most resistance, the more challenging path, because that makes you a better person. But yeah, at the end of the day, you'll probably look back and say, oh, it was a good choice. The other choice might've been pretty good too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's my thing is I think this is where it's become such a popular American myth almost, right? It's this kind of, not a myth, but it has this big American kind of feel to it, right? That like I did the hard way and the noble way or the moral way, or that I made the difficult choices, and that's what made all the difference in my character or my wealth or what have you, right?
Yep.
When all the while he's even saying to himself at the crossroads, this one may or may not be more or less difficult. It's just I will justify my choices at the end, so it really doesn't matter. So that's why I see so much less hope and optimism in this. Is I won't bring politics into this, but there are devices.
Bring politics,
that's political funny. Powers, right? Or political figures who are in power that, to me, take your approach to this program. Kind of on your last podcast I listened to, it reminds me a bit of The Emperor's New Clothes, right? Is that there's a self-deception to this that justifies how great your choices were. And to me, that zeal and bravado is not warranted because you couldn't have known which was the better path. So if you take the two versions of yourself, let's say there are two of them, you could take both paths. To me, the guy who took the one that ended up more, you know, the one that took the road that would made all the difference in this poem would like talk down to his other self. Like, you idiot, why'd you take that path? you should have done this one. You know, that's why I ended up so much better than you. And I think it's almost kind of like, why does he need to, you know, if it's a personal reflection, maybe that's where I'm reading this wrong. But again, it goes back to me. I think it's almost like he's telling a story at the end of the poem. And that's why I think it gets my goat on kind of his pride, his decision, when the decision, again, to me, wasn't all that monumental.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so to me, I would argue maybe against the efficacy of the choice. maybe a choice had to be made, but he's giving lots of credit where credit may or may not be due to taking the quote unquote harder path.
So, but the question is from like a living standpoint, right? Like, how mm-hmm. do you go about living your life and
flipping coins.
Yeah. So then
treating it as an adventure and not lamenting on what could have been, right? I think regrets, a lot of people maybe do live in regret, right? And you see people who don't get past things in their lives or have a hard road and then get stuck on that hard road and then blame the road, right? Or blame a choice that was made for them or a choice they made. It doesn't always end up making all the difference in a good way, right? Could have made all the difference in a horrible way, but they're still on that path. So,
yeah, I think that's part of the complexity of the poem. He doesn't say it's a good difference necessarily. And he even mentions like, sorry, I could not travel both and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I just take it as not good or bad, just is. Like, part of being a human is this paradox, it seems. And he's kind of playing on that. And part of being a human is, like you said at the beginning, I think, telling the story is part of making us feel better. But that is the reality. Like, it is good because we told that good story. And I think that's really important to understand is as humans, that is what we do. Just like, you know, it's not good or bad that the wolf ate the lamb. It just is. It's just what a wolf does. And what a human does, what a man does, what a woman does, is they tell a story about the choices they make. And that's part of it. Like, I think, and that's
and I guess to me, where my fear with a statement like that is there's so many bad choices seemingly, or negative choices that you could use to justify at the end.
Then how do you
those choices at the end?
So then, if you're going to have a standard to making a decision, because that's the question. Like, your standard for making decisions is Two-Face's standard, is Anton Chigurh's standard, which I think you should question that part of it. Why would you leave it to chance? And not say, hey, there's two choices. Why don't I do the one that scares me the most?
Now, that's a different subject, right? So I think that's, I think, you know, you and I both kind of growing up in sales careers really early on had to push through comfort barriers, right? It's always nerve wracking to go on your first sales call or.
Well, I think you've done that.
Even picking up a phone, right?
Yeah, I think you've done that. Yes.
Yeah, and I do think that's a positive thing for people to kind of jump outside of their comfort barriers. Like, if you haven't sung karaoke before, just get up there, have a good time. Nobody cares if you sing bad, right?
Yeah. Well, I hate, you're an asshole, because you make, like, I don't actually have a good time up there, but you're like, go up there anyway, and you make me sing in front of all your friends.
Perfect. Freaking you're making all New yeah, York, exactly. New York. You're entertaining the entire
room. No, but you
room.
Chose New York, New York. Just, you're such a jerk.
Like, I Did It My Way by Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra.
A nice,
whatever.
Easy tone to sing with.
Yeah,
got
but
the
it
whole
was,
room going.
Shut the heck up. Everyone stared at me like, who the fuck is this guy? And like, I, you know, because I don't actually get scared of stuff like that, but I generally don't enjoy it. Like, it's not like I had a good time. So I'm like, I'm going to punch you in the throat like, out of nowhere. Like, you're not even going to be aware. Just one day you're going to wake up and you're like, get punched in the throat. And this, maybe this podcast, I'm going to cut this part out. Like, I'm, this whole podcast is a trick to get your life ruined or something. Like, look
I
at
mean,
this guy, this douchebag.
That song
this
is actually,
podcast.
I Did It My Way is a great, it's actually a great reflection
right?
on this poem, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, you're
exactly.
kind of making that, maybe, yeah. he, you know, Frank Sinatra's choice is that he did it his way. And damn it, look at that path I carved. I
yeah.
took the hard way. I took my knocks.
Yeah,
I gave it all I got, but I did it my way, damn it. So I'm happy about the choices I made.
I agree.
So
I think that's true. But anyway, so you're right, and I think you do that a lot with your choices to a large degree. This is why I think it's about the, you know, the more difficult path and not just like everyday choices. But anyway.
So, okay, maybe this is a good segue then. I mean, do you feel you could place one of your choices in this category?
For sure. Oh yeah. Like my choice to be a writer and to do stuff like I'm doing now and to be a communicator was not a natural choice in a sense, because, you know, I was 18, 19 trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I was doing sales. I was mediocre at it at best. Like, I made money, as you know, but not, I wasn't, you know, I was always number like middle or four or five or something. So I was good. And I had no real writing experience. Like, I'd written here and there. I love to read. But I just kind of said, you know what? To hell with it. I'm going to choose the difficult path, because I think sales would have been the easier path, actually, in that case, for me. And then I'm going to choose something really challenging. I'm going to dedicate and shape my entire life around that. Like, if I would have pursued sales, I would have done all right and, you know, gone through that kind of path. But I chose to take the absolute hardest path that I could for me. And I, you know, that's made all the difference.
I mean, I would assert that there are probably harder paths you could have taken. Maybe, for instance, being like a stripper or something, you know, that would have been pretty difficult.
Dude, I don't know.
One, finding heels in your size and, you know, two, you're a pretty big, muscly dude. I don't know. Maybe have to have reinforced poles and stuff. That may have been a more difficult stretch for
well, it's
you.
It's like that's SNL, talking about SNL with Chris Farley.
Yeah. We're back to SNL.
Chris Farley and Kevin Patrick Stewart?
Patrick Stewart. Sorry, that'd be a great
one. That would have been awesome, yes. Who was it? Kevin...
It's Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, yeah. Thank you.
May he rest in peace. He's dead, huh?
I am.
Or is he alive? I get mixed up between the two, Kurt Russell and Patrick Swayze. I think Patrick Swayze is the one who died, and Kurt Russell's alive.
Yeah. Kurt Russell was in Hateful
Eight. Another thing you should link if you have anything around this podcast is Kevin James on King of Queens. He's a big dude, does do a full strip routine, like flips upside down on a pole and everything. It's
yeah.
hilarious.
That so. Dude is supposed to be super strong. Like, apparently whenever any comedian talks about him, he's like, yeah, that dude like works out all the time and he's amazingly
strong. So let's go back at this. This is the perfect example of this poem gone awry is Kevin James, right? A guy who followed his dream, comedy, and then ends up having this beautiful stand-up career, which leads to a TV deal and success and money, and then makes all these atrociously horrendous bad movies like Paul Blart Mall Cop for the rest of his days. Now, does he look back on that comedic choice of going down the hard road in a positive light? Because he has a bunch of money and people know his name, generally speaking. Or does he look at it like, wow, I went from being an artist to making dog crap movies for money to stay relevant?
Well, look, I don't have an answer to that.
I hope Kevin James has a big fat sigh when he's on his deathbed going, I should have done Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. That's a bad move.
I think he...
Wow. That was I'm not sure. The road less traveled, the road not taken.
I'm sure there's always going to be decisions like that. And we'd have to talk to Kevin James, because maybe he loves those stupid movies. Like, I think a lot of
if we get Kevin James on the show, please include me in this interview. And I'm happy to.
Yeah, but like the thing is, if you look at them, so whatever you may think personally, and I've never even seen them, so I don't know, but I haven't seen any of the new Adam Sandler movies in general, but somehow they're making a crap load of money. So people like it. And so there's something about, like, maybe he just likes doing dick and fart jokes for kids.
Maybe it's for all the lemmings who reflect on their life and are so proud of but all the choices they made.
Here's something better, I think. Yes, but here's something better with poetry. It's like, forget Kevin James. Yeah. Forget him. Forget Patrick Stewart and Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley. Forget all those guys. And the question is, you asked me, like, my life choice. What about yours?
Yeah.
Make it personal. So this is about choice in general, I think, right? So what about you?
Yeah, and I think I generally, in the moment when you're looking at, you can't really see the forest for the trees as you're staring at them. So the choices in my life really have been pretty random. And they've all, for me, luckily, been pretty, you know, humble in this, that all of the choices that I've made, regardless of what they were, good, bad, or ugly, have led me to where I am today. And it's a great place to be. So would have met some,
just kidding.
So for example, right, not being the most studious kid in high school and not going right to college, that is maybe a choice that I could easily lament, right, if I wanted to. But then I wouldn't have gotten into a working habit young, a money-saving habit, gotten into a sales career young, opened a business young, met you, right? So for me, it's the reflection doesn't come with a sigh. It just comes with, if you want to take some hopeful things from this, it's more that the aggregate of all the choices you made paint a pretty awesome mosaic of who you are, right? And there's no need, maybe that is the justification at the end of it, but I don't think that it's worth, you know, reflecting on, you know, all these choices you made and thinking that, oh, I made the right one, the perfect one there, or the other one. I don't think maybe there are some choices that are that concrete and fundamental that you have one or the other.
Yeah.
But I think it's much more of an aggregate type thing in life.
But I think that's part of the good thing I've been trying to say. I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is, so obviously there are options, like there's a book by Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment, and it's based on, it's one of my favorite books, and it's based on this choice that the character makes, Raskolnikov, really early on, where he kills the pawnbroker, and he kills, I always forget, like the daughter of the pawnbroker, who just happens to be there. But he does it for all these different justifications, and that's what the book is about. It's him trying to basically get away with it. But it's this huge choice that he makes, and he consciously, or you know, that's part of the thing, you have to think about it, but he does, like, premeditate that decision. And he does it for all these grand purposes, too. You know, to make himself.
And I guess my point is, you can't be certain of those grand purposes coming true either way. So you could have this great vision and plan and think you're making this great decision that are going to have great outcomes, and you're really in no control of the outcomes.
Well, I agree that you're not in full control, but don't you think you have a little bit of control in
your
actions?
Okay, you have a little bit of control, right? But
yeah,
I agree
which
with
is
that,
choice.
Right? But you can't pick which other forks are going to be at the end of the fork you just had, right?
So, way leads on to way. So you
let's
don't
go
know.
Into a Nicholas Sparks version of this, right? Yeah, it's like meeting the epic love of your life because you went down this one path because you took that job and she was there, right?
Yeah.
If you wouldn't have, you never would have met her, and this whole cosmic, you know, beautiful romance wouldn't have happened. So I think that's something where maybe, you know, in that scenario, the guy took the job because it was the easy one, but then the chance encounter of meeting his future wife at that job, that made the choice validated or worthwhile.
Yeah.
A good one.
But the question, so I agree that is painting a rosy picture. Like, maybe you never would have met that person. And so if you have the view that there's only one human on earth for you, that's a pretty
dire view, because what if you don't make that choice?
Kirk, we found each other, so I hope you're not telling me something on a podcast that would be really upsetting. I don't want to have to write in my diary.
Wait,
you're not the one person out there for me?
Oh, okay. Sure. I don't even know how to respond to that.
Sure. As uncomfortably as the audience just did.
Yeah, my mom and dad. They're the only
No, they're sitting on the couch in the future going like, we knew it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just a matter of time.
My dad totally asked me that one day in high school. He's like, are you gay? I was like, because you never date anybody. Like, thanks, Dad. I'm trying to go down that path, man, of straightness, but there's too many brambles and chases in my way. Whatever that means. Take that as you will, man.
Just when we were moving along so smooth.
No, that's part of the fun of it. I think we're making the choices on a small basis to go on different brambles, different paths, man, in the conversation.
Exactly.
But I think, the question for me, for you, that I want to know is, do you have control over your story? So who's the narrator in your story?
Oh, absolutely, you do.
So then,
yeah, absolutely.
That's the point. Is you're crafting your own story? Can random acts of horror or goodness happen? Sure.
Yeah, but no. But here's the thing. I guess is you are the hardest person to bullshit. Right? It's easy to bullshit everyone else and come up with a story that everyone loves, and maybe you get some sort of justification from. But if you know that your story is a bit fabricated, it's a bit dressed up. I think if you look at social media, is a great analogies all this these days, right? Everyone takes their time to get the perfect photo great lighting, or they go to great lengths to get this picture. And then if you could zoom out from that Instagram post to the actual scene, it's someone taking a picture during a music festival or during this beautiful hike, and they're looking at their phone instead of enjoying it.
Yeah.
Right? So you can get a glimpse of the epicness. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's kind of goes into it as well, is that if you're telling a story to yourself, you're the easiest one to fool. So if do you really have that? It'd be interesting to have someone on the show to talk about who someone we admire that has lived a great life, right? Their reflections on these, what are their regrets? What are their paths not taken? Those types of things. I think it'd be an interesting.
Well, there's one that struck home for me that was very scary to me. Actually, and it was an interview with Stephen Pressfield, who is an extremely successful writer of fiction. He wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance. That was his first big hit. And then he wrote a whole bunch of novels. He's written The Gates of Fire in the 90s, which is taught at like West Point, and it's about the Battle of Thermopylae, but it's like 300, but it's actually the story, like it's not just a cartoon, which I like 300, but anyway, so there's this interview of Stephen Pressfield. I think he was on the James Altucher show, and he talks about, because he didn't hit success until he was 50, really. Like, he wrote a little bit, but nothing real, he did a whole slew of odd jobs, and he talks a lot about this in his books, like the War of Art rather than Art of War, the War of Art, which is a great book. I really recommend it to any creator. But he now I think he's in his like 70s or something, like, so, and or late 60s, and he talks about it sounded like a regret, although he doesn't paint it that way in the interview, of all the women he's lost along the way, and the family. Like, he never really had to have a time to have a family because he had dedicated himself down the path of writing fiction and literary fiction for all that. So And it took him like 50 years to get there. So there is an element where, there is an element of regret there, I think. And there is an element of that if he would have gone down a different path, he might have been happier. And it's hard to know.
Right.
But that was part of the choice. And, he made that choice. And that's just, you have to live with it somehow.
Fair enough.
If you're going to live. But so that is, that's part of the paradox of choice, I think, of life choice.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I think it's a fun poem because it's so, again, easily to insert yourself into it. That's what I like about it. And I love that you can take a very literal meaning. You can go, you know, internal with yourself to think about it that way. You can put all your own choices in this poem. I think that's, again, the great success of it and why it's been so popular is because, whatever platform you're going to take on this or whatever you're going to take from the poem, whatever it gives to you, you can justify all of that, right? That's what's fun about a poem about choice. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think, so for you, it seems like it's been a way to reflect on choices, mm-hmm. on the choices you've made.
Right.
Which I think is good. Like that.
The coins I've flipped.
The coins that you've flipped, yes. That and that's, well, you know, when I did a podcast on this episode, on this poem a long time ago when I was just trying to learn about podcasts. Now I'm obviously a pro. I'm just the best, but
obviously listen to that voice.
Listen,
creamy. Well,
yes. Trained as I sit here in my stained t-shirt, but there's
those are sweat stains. That's from effort, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Art is work.
Chris Farley right there, baby. And he was an artist, that stripper, Chris Farley character. But he, and he lived in a van down by the river.
And he also died of a drug overdose.
And he died of a drug.
Perhaps a choice.
Not the road less taken. He should have taken the road more taken of people not.
At least the road with less hamburgers on it.
Less hamburgers and less cocaine. Much less cocaine.
You know.
Whoa.
Maybe it was a snowy road.
I'm sending this to your boss. I'm sending this to your boss right away. This will be easy. So a lot of you don't know this. I want to make this big announcement right now because Chase is going on world travels. Can we make that?
I am.
Can we make that
absolutely
announcement?
Okay. Absolutely. We actually just planned a lot of this stuff last night. So
who are you going with? Are you going? I thought you were going by yourself.
So I've got a, you know, there's a few times in life, this is a choice maybe, where you meet a best friend, someone that you meet immediately, and then you just like click and connect.
Fuck that
and
guy.
So it's one of my friend of a friend's that we've been hanging out. What'd you say?
I said, fuck that guy. Jerk.
Don't worry, Kirk. No one can replace you.
Whatever.
He just, you know, he's taking the road not taken and, you know, not doing the hard thing and partying with me around the world. So let us know how it goes in the trenches.
But that seems like the hard thing from a certain degree. So it is because, like, yeah, it's easy if you just party. Yeah, sure. But that's probably not
right,
that difficult.
Right.
But
not the purpose of the trip. Yep.
It's not the fundamental purpose, I don't think.
Right.
I'm sure that's
exactly.
Part of it. I mean, you party anyway. You probably party harder when you're not partying all the time, I bet. That's my assumption of you, is that now that you're working...
Only if other people aren't having fun.
No,
that's,
I mean, like...
one thing
now
I
that
can't stand.
You're working all the time right now, and you party a lot. I bet when you're out partying for a living or whatever, when you're out there, you're not going to party as much as you might think because you won't need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, probably
like,
not.
It's not the escapism.
That's true.
Right? So I could be wrong. We'll see. Maybe you'll just get drunk and dead in a ditch somewhere in Rome.
No. But I think this is, I mean, my trip kind of goes into the element of choice, right? I think if you choose too much or you worry too much about your choices, you totally negate all the adventure you could have by just letting life kind of take you with, right? So as part of this journey, we're pretty deliberate that we're only going to buy a one-way ticket out of the U.S., and kind of a general timeline of how long we think we might want to stay at certain places. But really, that's the only stipulation. There's not, you know, a hotel booked in every country and I have a phone number for each, you know, place. It's literally going to be, hey, let's land in one spot. Here's some fun ideas. Let's go try them out and then see where it lands us, right? So one of our ideas, we both have family in London, is to go and buy a motorcycle with a sidecar. Thinking of getting some aviator goggles and a Red Baron mustache and just biking around Europe. Why not? Sounds like a great idea. Should be fun. So that's, you know, that's the thing where I think choice is overrated, because as long as maybe the crossroads is fundamentally the fundamental part is the important part, right? Like, do I stay and build a career on the same path, or do I shake things up and go do something like travel around the world? Maybe that's the choice. But after that, you know, let it happen. Let life happen, man. Enjoy the ride.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So that I know we got to wrap up pretty soon here, but I think this is a good part of the conversation where
that's what I'm trying to say about fundamental choice. So there's small choices, like, you know, what to eat today, like what you're going to eat for breakfast, a salmon or a pizza, whatever. Or, but then there's like the huge question or the locus of choice, like that. If, you know, think of it like a pie chart, or like, I don't know, a dot, and then there's a whole bunch of arrows coming out of it. And that's the fundamental choice. So like, for you and for me, I think, you know, even in what I'm doing, there's a lot of daily things that I'm not exactly choosing that, you know, I'm not going to regret, or anyway, it's kind of just, it's a part of the path. Like it's in, but I chose that fundamental crossroads to go down it. And then, you know, I never thought I'd be I would try podcasting when I started going on. It didn't even exist.
Right.
So stuff like that's the same thing. The same thing with your traveling. So if you're not happy with one aspect of work or something, and you want to shake things up, like you say, that is a good way to like get life experiences outside of the normal society that you're from. Right. I think poetry is another way, but I think you should be doing both. And I think you're living a good life doing both. Now the question is, of course, what is the overarching choice of your life going to be? And have you made that choice? Like in terms of, you know, I believe there has to be, personally, it helps to have a productive locus of choice, like a fundamental, but Robert Frost talks a lot, like all of his poems to a large degree is about these societal, norms that we live in and our relationship as, you know, natural creatures. He talks like in Mending Wall, he has other poems about this where, you know, it's like, we're putting up this wall, and this is where the poem Good Fences Make Good Neighbors come from.
Right.
And he actually is questioning, like, well, why do you think good fences make good neighbors? We have this fence here, and there's no reason to have a fence here. Like, because there's no cows.
It's totally arbitrary.
It's arbitrary. Like, the purpose of having a fence for farmers is that there are cows, and your cows might come and eat my farm crops, right? But we have no cows on this section, so why do we have this fence?
Well,
and
the unless guy your neighbor's says, bathroom window is right up next to your kitchen window, then there might be a reason for a fence. But
yes, thank you. But I appreciate that. That's true. Are you talking about, like, Sarah Palin, that thing she did?
No, what?
So like, she had this thing about like a long time ago where people were made fun of her in relation to this poem, Mending Wall, where she made a quote. She had a saying where I'm going to put like a big fence here because I don't want paparazzi, blah, blah, blah. You know, good fences make good neighbors. And, you know, people just like got lambasted her for that, which I thought was a little weird. But anyway, like my point is that there's like this relationship between the norms we have, because the character that wants to build the wall, the Frost character asks him, well, why do you want to build a wall here? And he just says, good fences make good neighbors. It's a proverb he's been handed. He doesn't question it, right? He's like a stone's. So it's like, how do you question these societal things? How do you exercise your free will if you're given only these two paths? Where you say, well, fuck these two paths. I'm going to go and look at those 20 paths over there. And that's kind of what you're doing, I think. Like, that's the locus of you're trying to shake it up. And I think poetry can do the same thing as well, and I'll challenge people to read more poetry, more literature too. But anyway,
it's my rant. I agree. So,
thank you.
Yes, I'm actually standing here looking at a map, you know, and it's it's fun to see. I'm wondering now all about all sorts of paths and trees at each one of them. So
there you go, you asshole. Thank you. Ridiculing my rant. I appreciate it. It was a choice I made.
There's no ridicule. I promise there's no ridicule.
Okay. So, okay, before we go, we can't not talk about the story of this beer. So what choice led you to the story of this beer at the bottom of a billy goat mountain path in Kyrgyzstan? And I'm just making shit up. You know, with like tribes all around you. So what choice led to that? And tell that story, and then that'll be the end of the podcast, because I know you got to get out of here.
Yeah, no problem. So there's a lot of choices that led to me being in Norway by accident at 4 a.m. driving to a hike. But my brother-in-law is from Bosnia, of all places. And we're having his bachelor party, and we had to decide where can we get, you know, somebody with a Bosnian passport, which is notoriously difficult to get visas for and travel with. where do we get his, what's a country where we get his friends to that we can meet them at so we can all have a good time for his bachelor party? The options were Cuba and Amsterdam. Two good choices, but I think we made the right one in going to Amsterdam for the bachelor party. So it was about, I think all in all, we got it to about 10 of us, maybe 12 of us in total. It was fun because people kept adding to the journey as we were going along. So I think we about drank all the beer in Amsterdam, if you can imagine that. So on the last night of the first week, about half the group was scheduled to fly back home after this week of shenanigans and bike riding and beers. And then the other half of us were going to go on to Berlin to continue the trip, right? I'm the kind of person that I push all of my vacation days into one like lump thing because I really want to get a chance to feel what a city's like or a place is like. And I don't, it's hard to do that when you're bouncing around too
much. Yeah, I love that. No, I agree.
Yep, exactly. You get to meet, kind of mix it up with the locals, that type of thing. So long story long, after me getting on stage during one of the live sex shows, maybe I'm admitting too much here.
Gee, live sex, like SEX?
Yeah, Amsterdam's a strange place.
Okay.
This is a strange place. This is where live I'm going to politely ask you to edit this out to protect the innocent.
No, this is unedited, baby.
Here's the thing.
I didn't tell you, this is live. Your parents are listening right now.
This is on Facebook Live.
This is on Facebook Live. You're saying live sex, awesome. Not you. You're watching this. You're not having sex on
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. They kind of have, they have live sex, and then they have like acts, we'll call them, that come on every like 5 minutes
involved?
Or so. No donkeys. Okay, there was a cigar that was smoked from the nefarious place. Very talented. And then there's this banana routine that I got on stage for. They bring three people up from the audience. I ham it up. One of my fondest snapshots of my life will be looking out at the crowd of all my best friends, minus Kirk, just dying in laughter at the ridiculous things that are happening on stage.
Wait, so are you going to tell us about this banana, or are you going to leave that hanging? What did you do with your banana?
So here's this. There's me, three dudes, and a girl on stage. And from
this
the
already sounds horrible.
Point,
three dudes and a girl on stage.
This is my nightmare.
This is a nightmare.
So see, this is why you got to. This way to do karaoke, so you prepared for moments of greatness like this story. So from the audience's vantage point, the banana goes in a very nefarious zone of the lady who's running the show. And then once it's there, the participants take a bite out of the banana. So
I'll tell you that. I'm not editing that. You should have just said, you should have just left that to the imagination. That, I mean, I'm glad you said nefarious because there's two options at least. But so
the least nefarious of the two.
Yeah, what is the least nefarious according to Chase? Because I don't use that term nefarious for either of those. But all right,
this is why I'm never going to be president. This is why. But it's okay. It's okay.
No, dude, because it's getting perpetually worse. Where, you know, it was like, Obama smoked
a bar.
Yeah, like, well, it's like, yeah, exactly. Anyway, so go ahead with your story after the banana.
So I'll assure you that the banana was not inserted anywhere, but merely resting.
Okay.
And I took a bite out of said banana. But from the audience's vantage point, that was a pretty interesting interaction I had with that lovely young lady. I'll be happy to say also, I took the first bite of the banana.
Like, okay. Good.
Two guys after me took a bite out of this banana.
So, never want sloppy thirds. Like sloppy thirds.
Yeah. No, exactly. This is why you should have some zeal and bravado and lead in life, so you don't eat the banana. Maybe that I should make a poem about that.
Yeah.
All right. For another day.
Eat the banana.
So obviously we're dying laughing. We're all in a great mood after this show because we're a bunch of guys and we finally did, you know, the bachelor party thing and went to some, you know, see naked chicks type thing. So at the bar after that, we keep drinking. Oh my gosh. Like we're cheersing glasses over, and breaking them in the bar. Right. We're hashtag lit for all the young kids out there.
There are no
so
young
earlier
kids
in the week,
listening to this. Sorry.
One day, upon reflection,
there are.
One day.
Go ahead.
So the whole week, Demir had been talking all about how exotic Oslo, Norway is, right? And he had shown us this video on YouTube, and it was one of these, you know, typical travel videos where it's, got a time lapse of this mountain and northern lights and this little fishing village, and it's just beautiful, right? And the show covered in snow. So the whole time we're thinking that's what Oslo is, right? So we're super excited. Like, we're not going to go to Berlin. Demir, James, we're going to extend their flights. We're all going to go to Norway. It's going to be this epic thing. Earlier in the week, I'd even drawn up a tattoo based on some of the things we had done that week. We're going to get this tattoo together. Just a ridiculous, like, what is the most ridiculous bachelor party you could have? That was the bar that we had set with going to Oslo.
Nice.
Well, after 5 in the morning and all this excitement, I end up buying flights for everybody. Like, we put it on my credit card and at the bar and bought flights for everyone to go. We all changed our plans. So at 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, like the next morning, Demir comes and wakes me up and he's like, dude, I can't get my flight changed. I have to go back. Ashley's going to kill me. Ashley's my sister, his now wife.
Until she hears the story of bananas. That's it.
Demir, this is also a joke during the trip. Ashley, if you're listening, Demir was a saint the whole time. And we literally, this is true, had to drag him into the show, of which he sat in the back and was not happy with it the whole time. Until I got on stage, then he finally laughed. So anyways, after booking all these tickets and spending all this money and being all this excited, Demir comes in and says, I can't change my flights. And he's on the way back home before we even all wake up the next day. So we get on our flights, we're super tired, hungover, land in Oslo, which is the least exotic city in Norway you could ever imagine. It's not bad. I mean, it's probably better looking than anything in Texas, but that's not a high threshold. There's no fjords, right? This is like a shipping city. And it looks like Uptown Dallas. You know, it's like there's a Deloitte and an EY building that's new and a park. But we're looking around like, how much money do we just spend to get to this not exotic place? So it turns out the Oslo Demir had pitched and sold to us, was some remote fishing village up in the like Arctic Circle, and is nowhere even near Oslo. Like, this was like 3 planes away from Oslo. So we're all sitting there. However, there's the Hurricane Harvey's hitting Houston, my hometown where I live. So it's just this kind of funk that is like come over the group. So to make one decision better, we decided to rent a car and drove 9 hours across Norway. It's a beautiful drive to get to Bergen, which is a much more picturesque, what you would think of Norway, fjords, bridges, you know, countryside, that type of thing. So again, long story long, to get to this hike, this is another full week of partying, mind you. I decide really even before we go to Norway that I have to do this Trolltunga hike. It's a really famous hike. A lot of you have probably maybe seen, or Kirk, did you heard about it before? Like, have you seen pictures of it?
Only through you.
Okay. Well, this is the kind of thing like I pay attention to, because this is like a bucket list type hike, right? It's cool. One of the most incredible hikes you can take.
Yeah.
So everyone else chickened out. The day before, I went and bought a jacket, I bought hiking shoes, just to make sure I wouldn't die. Because if you look at the website, it says it's a 12-hour hike or something like that, maybe even longer. So it's a full day hike and it's a 3-hour drive to get to the trailhead. So everyone else chickened out. I decided to go by myself at 4 in the morning to this hike. Drove past these beautiful apple orchards on the way. There's like kids waiting for buses, which I found really charming. Like, they wake up to this beautiful landscape and fjords as their everyday thing. And they probably still whine about school and their choices. and then it turns out you get to the hike and you can pay $20 to drive halfway up the hard part. So nice. It was only a three hour hike, and I got to the most epic, beautiful, it looked like Fern Gully or Land Before Time or something. When you get up there, just amazing place.
Thank you. Met
this group of Mexicans from Guadalajara. We had a great time. We were laughing. Even got a kiss out of that too. So me and this really cool girl from Guadalajara, Mexico, got a chance to like go on this epic hike together and see all this and experience it. It was awesome. The beer, that's what we're getting to. So coming back, it was a little more demanding hike. I mean, I'd say total it was like a 6-hour, 7-hour hike, something like that. And at the base of this epic hike, they have Trolltunga beer. And in Norway, they have to open them there. They don't let you like take some to go. I don't know if this is just a, like an actual law or just this place trying to keep their beer right there. But it was probably one of the most satisfying beers I've ever had. So at the base of Trolltunga in Norway, that's the wink and the smile.
Nice.
For a day well lived.
That is a great story, man. You should send me that picture. I'll put it on the website.
We're gonna use that.
And you know, people have to wait till the end to hear that great story. So that's good. And it's a good example. It's a good way to end the road not taken, because you chose the road not taken, literally. Because nobody else wanted to take it. And then it actually ended up being better, because, you know, everyone was afraid of the 12 hours, but there was like the 3 hour, and then you got to make out with some hot chick on the rooftop of the world. And that's great. I like it.
Perfect.
I'm assuming she's hot. I don't know if that's true. She could have been like
She's gonna be a runway model in this scenario. What if this gets famous? You know.
Yeah, so. Exactly. This is. I shall be telling this with a sigh. And on that note.
On that note.
Thank you for coming, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.